RPG Lessons Learned. When the game is over, when your players are gone, that's when lessons are learned. We are at RPGLL Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, rpglpodcast@gmail.com, and check us out online at rpglessonslearned.com. Hi, welcome to RPG Lessons Learned, the show where you can learn from our mistakes. With me, as usual, is Mike.
Hello.
And we have an under-the-weather Brian. Brian has been fighting off a cold and some coughing, so if his voice sounds a little thick, you know why, but thanks for joining us, even though you're under the weather, Brian.
Thank you. I've been sick since July. I'm not joking.
That's pretty accurate.
I'm not joking. Since July 5th, I can tell you the day I got sick.
Weirdest thing, I've been sick for about 6.5 years. What's the correlation? No, it gets better. It gets better. Once they adapt to all the school germs around them, it gets a lot better. All right. Today, we're talking about a game that we called Guards, Guards. You know, as if you're calling the guards. I decided to let you guys play City Guards. And all four of you, so Chris, Nathan, Brian, and Mike, played this game. And you were all promoted within the City Guard. You were singled out as particularly effective guards. I didn't say how in the setup. And then you were tasked with just reducing overall crime in Fallcrest. We'd been playing our games in and around Fallcrest for so long that as far as Captain Nathan Faringray was concerned, things were getting a little out of hand, and he wanted some guards to try to bring things to heel. So, quick impressions, guys. Let's give our numeric ratings. And actually, if you don't mind, I'll go first. Sometimes I forget to rate the games myself. I rated this game a 7. So I think it had solid potential. I loved the guard concept. I mean, of course I did. I came up with it and proposed it and executed it. But I really loved the idea of being guards and tackling crime in more of an authoritarian way and letting you guys be the authority as opposed to having to deal with the authority. I think the prep that I did was focused and good and used. I think our execution was pretty good. The only thing that dragged it down to a 7 were some weird party decisions, and we'll get into that later. Brian, what's your numeric score, and what are your thoughts?
Well, so I haven't thought about the game in a couple of years, so it's not fresh on my mind. So, like, all of the things that you talked about that you thought was quirky sort of faded away. So for me, what I remember are the high points. So, I mean, I'm giving it a solid 8. It was cathartic. Like you said, we were the authority, and we abused that a little bit. Not like in a terrible, like, unethical way. It may be, maybe slightly unethical, but it was a chance to sort of cut loose a little bit, and we can still RP, but we don't have to be as clean and neat as we sometimes are, you know, trying to be good mercenaries and adventurers in Fallcrest.
Yeah, I was really eager to see if you guys were going to be, like, good guards or kind of crooked guards, or were you going to, you know, reduce crime rate by helping some criminals and harming others and kind of going along to get along with criminals, or were you going to – I was so eager to see what you guys were going to do.
We were like Mayor Giuliani, you know, like sort of late 90s guards, sort of what we were.
Tough on crime?
Yeah.
Mike, how about you? What's your number and thoughts?
I think I'm probably going to have to give this one a 6 just because I don't know. I think kind of when I was in my headspace for this one, I was like, oh, we get to be a guards. I can do my usual, you know, oh, I'm going to bust everything down and, you know, do investigation and cop and things like that. And it didn't phase out, right? We totally went in the opposite direction with that, which isn't a fault of the game. But I think when the entire party is a person of authority, I think we get into steamroller mode. So I think giving us a party of authority figures maybe isn't the best idea for our group of players.
For one shot, though, I thought it was great.
For one shot, yeah. Yeah. That's a good point, too.
Do you mean you steamroll each other, or do you mean you steamroll the NPCs?
All the above.
Yeah.
So it's like four project managers and no analysts.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
How do I solve it? Do I give you minions?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know if you can solve for that, right? That
God, all of a sudden I'm having like ideas for board games. Like how do you make a board game about running the town guard in a city full of adventurers where the adventurers cause Jesus just as many problems as the monsters do? How do you keep law and order when you've got Link breaking every clay pot he can find and you've also got goblins raiding?
That sounds like Kingdom Come by Mark Waid. If you never read that, I mean, it's kind of what it is.
I'll have to look into that. I have not even heard of it.
Really?
All right, cool. Wow. No, yeah, I haven't.
It was one of the most popular comics of the late 90s.
While we're talking inspiration, I should say that the Guards Guards title, of course, came from Terry Pratchett's book, Guards Guards, which focuses on the guards in a medieval fantasy town. And that's a bunch of slapstick humor. So I didn't go for the humor, but I loved the guards concept. So the setup. Before this game, I sent you guys not a lengthy email, but if you printed it, it would be probably a page and a quarter with a lot of detail around, you know, what's the concept of the game? What town are you in? What's the current word on the street? And then I gave you a fairly lengthy write-up on, I used to love doing this, where I give you kind of the rails for how to build your character. You know, what level you could make your character, you know, any notes I had on classes and races, how I wanted you to generate your ability scores, how much equipment I wanted you to have, and how many magic items I would allow at character creation. I loved doing that. And then a little bit about the game itself. Honest question. Before the game, did you guys read the email?
I did, because yeah, I made my own character for this game, I'm pretty sure. I don't think I selected a pre-gen, so I would have read the email enough to get the requirements for creating the character.
So I go back, this was in my slightly lazier days, because this was before we started the podcast, and I think I really became a better player, like in Pathfinder, honestly, when we were going through that campaign. So at this point, I know that I would have read the email, but oftentimes when there's other homework, I didn't necessarily always do that. But if it was just an email, yeah, I did that. I did that much, I'm certain.
Well, you made your character for this one too, right?
I don't know if I did a pre-gen or not. I had the character's name. Gosh, actually, when we were talking about this before, Dusty was going through some character stuff. And I half thought that he might have done a pre-gen, and I just selected that.
No.
You didn't? Okay, well, okay.
Now, before this, Brian, I would have sent you that file that Wizards put out that had all the beginner box. Well, they didn't call it the beginner box. The beginner, whatever it was. The 5th edition box set that was the starter set. That included a bunch of characters, and Wizards put those PDFs up on their site for free. I would have sent you guys those. So you may have used one of those.
I might have selected one and leveled up. Or actually, don't they have? They actually had those stratified by level, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wizards put out the zip file that had, you know, level 1, level 3, level 5, whatever it was. They had a bunch of different levels of the same NPCs.
Yeah, I probably selected that.
Or pregens. Okay. Did these emails help in general when I sent them, when I gave you... So, Mike, if you rolled your own character, when I gave you these bounds... Was this helpful or was it annoying?
No, I definitely say that was helpful because, you know, kind of creating your own character from the beginning can be a little challenging doing it on your own. And then also, you know, leveling it up with some of the boundaries you had would have been, you know, interesting as well. So I remember one of the things we had is like, you know, your person needs to be able to fit onto the guard. You know, you might not be a minotaur, you know, you might not be a minotaur on the captain guard.
Or I'm certain there's some minotaurs that mentor other guards.
The mentor minotaur?
Or minotaur mentor.
Either way.
Yeah.
When minotaurs mentor their mentees about... Okay. Yeah.
Is mentee the appropriate real word? Because I hate that word.
You know, it frequently gets used, and I think every other word is almost pejorative. Student. I mean, that implies a level of... It implies a relationship that frankly doesn't exist. So I think mentee is probably as good as you're going to get.
I hate that word.
Mentee.
Follower. I mean, there's nothing, everything to replace it sounds worse.
Acolyte.
Ooh, I like that, though.
Yeah, and I didn't disallow the Minotaur, right? What I literally said was, if you have a Minotaur, backstory. Yeah, you better have a good backstory.
Yeah. And right, that, so, that I absolutely did not do, right? I was like, okay, I'm going to keep this as simple as possible. My guy is named Stanley. He's on the town guard.
Yes, it was Stanley the town guard. Stanley the as Mike often plays, the Stanley the grizzled cop.
The beat cop, yeah.
So that email's before the game. You roll your character, you show up, and the hook I gave you was, all right, Nathan Faringray has brought you junior guards together as a special task force. And I was thinking of, like, you know, the strike team in the Shield, or, you know, SVU in Law and Order, or the Untouchables in the FBI. So I'm thinking, just like at work, when you have these cross-functional projects of experts, I'm bringing together this entire team of experts who are going to solve the crime problem in Fallcrest. You'd have all the resources of the town guard, which would be lots and lots of mundane resources and some limited manpower, but fairly limited magic, fairly limited wealth. So, you know, you have a project budget. And then I was going to turn you guys loose and let you tackle crime in town. How is this as a setup? And let me start off with, did you buy it? Did you buy that Nathan Faringray might resort to pulling together a cross-functional project team to tackle this issue?
I think at the time I probably thought of it more as, I don't want to say mercenaries, because we were official town's guardsmen, but that he was, you know, kind of reaching the bottom of the barrel, and there was a crisis in town, and he had to go to extreme measures for you know, extreme crises. So I definitely bought into that. I mean, if you kind of think about it in modern terms, you have your specialist squads on the police force, you have your SWAT teams, you have your drug enforcement teams and stuff like that. So I thought it was very believable.
I think it's a little contrived, but I'm okay with that. And mostly that's because, even though he doesn't exist, I've kind of built up this hero worship thing for Nathan Faringray. And I don't think that he would... The team that we ended up being, I don't think that he would have assembled us.
No, absolutely.
Is Nathan Faringray your favorite NPC?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Second only to Elsora Gandithis.
You know, I like Elsorai quite a bit, but that's probably fair.
With Elsorai and Nathan, Brian, do we have a thing with you and father figure NPCs?
Yeah, I mean, I had a pretty crummy father, so it's not totally believable.
Huh. Fair enough.
Sorry.
I don't know how else to touch that. I was not going to delve deeper on that one. Certainly
and
it not.
It gets a little weird.
Not on the show. We will pick that up next time we have lunch together. And we are not recording in front of hundreds or dozens of people.
Hundreds.
Did the setup make you guys want to work together? I think group cohesion, it's funny, man. We've been playing together for years, but I still read those horror stories about the players are like, wait a minute, why would I work with him? Pointing at another player. I think sometimes we can be guilty of that. Did this setup make you want to work together? Or, Mike, is this your steamroller moment?
I think this is my steamroller moment, right? I'm pretty sure I wanted to approach this, you know, like Gumshoe, you know, Columbo, beat cop, investigation, buy the books, just the facts, ma'am. And everybody else wanted to be, you know, like, beat everyone into submission.
Murder hobos.
Authority. Murder hobos once again. And I think that probably did drag me down a little bit, because, you know, this is my time to shine, and you know, I get to really actually be a cop with the authority to do the cop things that I sometimes lean towards in my game anyway. And I think I felt a little bit dragged down by that.
So it didn't necessarily make you want to work together because you felt like you weren't on the same page. So maybe, and we've had this issue before. In fact, honestly, in the last game that we played, you know, we recently talked about our brief World of Dungeons game where we played Frozen, where working together and being cohesive about what you're trying to accomplish was an issue when you were dealing with those young men in that tavern. Because Nathan was going one way and Chris was going an entirely different way. So maybe there's something here about taking a metagame moment to get aligned about what you're trying to do.
So bring in a little bit of that table talk to figure out what the party wants to do. But then how do you balance that, right? Because if you're trying to play it to real life, you can't take that tabletop moment in real life to, you know, pull the aside together and be like, oh, hey, let's huddle in a corner and whisper about these guys.
I'll tell you what I was hoping for. Honestly, I was hoping for this to be a mini, you know, 3 to 5 session campaign where I've presented you, I've assembled this tiger team. I've given you this problem of the crime rate in Fallcrest. I would have loved you guys to have had almost like a strategy meeting or, you know, hey, let's get together with goals and objectives and come up with what was your strategy going to be? How were you actually going to tackle the medieval crime rate?
Wait, you expected us to come up with a plan for a game and execute that plan?
I totally did. I was really looking forward to seeing your approach to this.
You know, we're not that good.
So, go ahead, Mike.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, you know, if you present a problem to us, we're just going to bash our heads against it until the problem goes away or we die.
So I could have maybe stood up what I was hoping for a little more clearly. But I'm reluctant to do that a lot of the times because I don't want to push you to play my way. I was thinking of this really cerebral game around, you know, crime rate and statistics and, you know, the 80-20 rule about where should you put your effort versus not and what's going to be the most impactful. I was thinking of this really cerebral game. And if I would have told you that was my expectation, I would have worried that wouldn't have been your kind of fun. And for me, the fun is how do you approach this problem? All right, we'll move on from that. Would this hook work today? Would it make you want to work together? Would you be interested in this game? Or have I gotten better at making hooks a little less, to borrow your word, Brian, contrived?
I think you've gotten better at that. And I think this was a perfectly good hook, except considering the person that we were working for. But I mean, I think if I was in the right mindset, I would have been more willing to accept that Nathan Faringry would have pulled this together. But yeah, I think this would work now. In fact, this idea of the gritty crime drama, I mean, I've been having to put a lot of thought, deep thought lately into, you know, what's best and making tough trade-off decisions. And I think it might be fun to try to do that. I mean, sometimes grappling with, in work, you know, in training, oftentimes we do role play to help think through, you know, tough problems. And I think it'd be perfectly reasonable to have that kind of game as, you know, if you'd propose that. At this time, though, I think the players that we were, at the maturity level we were, Murder Hobos was about as far as we could go. But I think we've tackled a lot of challenging thoughts and ideas and themes, you know, since then. I think if we did this again, it would be less about blowing off steam, maybe, and probably more about, you know, just trying to feel out the characters and create something kind of engaging.
Yeah, this was a time in our gaming careers when I felt like any delay between pointing you at the things you were supposed to kill drove, honestly, frustration sometimes.
I think if we played this hook again today, I would be the very button-down, laced-up beat cop. Chris and Nathan would be crooked cops, and Brian would be stuck in the middle trying to figure out an interesting character.
And it'd be just as big a train wreck?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think this was a lot to ask. I think I was hoping for the cerebral thought and, you know, fun and simulationist type thing. And, you know, scenarios, sort of like think tank type, how do you tackle this problem? And we just weren't ready for that. And I don't know that we are today. And maybe the hook's just too cerebral.
Yeah, I definitely agree that we're not a simulationist gaming group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the build up. I gave you the hook. We started off, you introduced your characters to each other, and then we started the build up. And I gave you guys several gangs you can go after. And I tore these right out of the Monster's Vault threats to the Dentier Veil. So, by the way, this was a 5th edition game, but I love that 4th edition lore. I love the Dentier Veil. I love the 4th edition story products. I love the Hammerfast supplement. I love so much about 4th edition. So I loved using the Falkrest gangs that were in that Monster's Vault Threats to the Dentir Veil. So I used those gangs in those stories, but then I used 5th edition monsters. So it gave you several gangs you can go after. You landed on just busting the River Rats' heads, going down to the wharves, to the docks where the River Rats hung out, and you really quickly landed on, we're just going to go in their favorite bar and we're going to bust some heads. And you went straight to kind of the shield, the strike team, where you hit first, you hit hard. You're Cobra Kai, strike first, strike hard, no mercy. But you could have picked any strategy, you know, CSI, going after the heads of the gangs, but you chose to become enforcers busting heads. Did you feel pigeonholed into that enforcer mode?
No, I mean, it's where I wanted to go at the time. I mean, I didn't feel pigeonholed at all. I felt that it was liberating because I wanted to play that kind of character because I hadn't played that kind of character. Typically, I would play, I mean, up until this point, I think I was still playing a paladin for the most part. Or, you know, like a fighter with a just, you know, purpose. It felt great to sort of bust some heads. And that's exactly what I wanted and needed at the time.
I think it was, you know, going back to that absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that was the way we were going to roll with it. So we all just rolled with it.
So I do want to spend just a moment on prep and how I prepped for this. So to come up, you know, I said I came up with three different factions. I borrowed the stories from Threats to the Dentir Veil. I took the monsters from the Monster Manual. That sounds like a lot to organize. I want to give a shout out to this Dungeons & Dragons Combat Tracker worksheet. Brian, I found a link for it that I'll ask you to put in the show notes. The link goes out to a DriveThruRPG, and it's a pay-what-you-want item, and the DriveThruRPG author links to the original authors on Reddit, because the DriveThruRPG guy tweaked it and then, you know, made it pay what you want and monetized it, which we can argue the how good we feel about that. But still, it's a good link. It's a great worksheet, and what the worksheet is intended for is laying out a combat encounter. There's, you know, initiative laid out, 25 through negative 5. So as people are telling you their initiative rolls, you can just jot their names in real quick. You can name the combat encounter. There's room to write in the stats for three different monsters. I didn't use these sheets as combat trackers. I used them to build out the factions. I used them to say, okay, here are the lower level members of this faction up on top. Here are the next highest up level. And then here are the bosses at the bottom. So I use those three monsters, or those three spaces for monsters, to give each faction sort of a staff. I knew who all was in it, and I could pull this sheet out and use post-it notes to do nothing but, you know, track how many of the lower level monsters I was using and how many hit points they had left. So really easy for me. Brian, if we could link that would be awesome for anyone playing 5th edition.
I think we can.
Sweet.
I know a guy.
You know a guy? You know, a guy that knows how to link stuff. I eventually must figure out how to publish this podcast. We've said it before. I want to say it again on the air. Brian, thank you for the editing and posting and the work you do to make the podcast actually appear in people's feeds.
Absolutely.
You're welcome.
So moving on from the prep, moving on from the setup, a lot happened in this game, and I want to cover some of the high points. One of the high points... So I gave you access to all the resources that guards might reasonably have, you know, including some limited manpower. And you guys picked exactly one newly recruited guard, and you put him undercover in the underworld. And the mission you gave him was, hey, climb the ranks and we'll come debrief you. And then you guys, the only ones who knew his cover, died. And not to, you know, spoilers ahead, this was a total party kill for us. You guys all died after telling him that his mission as a guard was to climb the ranks of the underworld. Mm. Did we agree what happened to him?
We talked about it. I mean, we were... did we actually encounter him in a game? I knew that we talked about encountering him in another game where he was going to be... basically the leader of the underworld.
Actually, great question, Brian. You encountered him in another game. in the Assassin's Creed game.
Oh, yes, that's right. I knew I was thinking about that game for some reason.
He was the head of the Thieves Guild that gave you and the other guy at Mace the mission that resulted in you killing Nathan Ferrigrath.
Oh, no.
Wah, wah.
So that game, the Assassin's Creed game, it's in continuity with this game.
Yes, it is.
And this is in continuity with our previous game.
Yep.
Oh, no.
It's all one world in my head. It's so much easier for me to keep straight.
And
it's so much...
no. I always thought of that as a separate universe.
Oh, nah, no. Man. Yeah, if we ever play in Falkrest again, you've Nathan Ferrigrath is dead.
Oh, how could you, Brian? He was our favorite NPC.
Was it me or the other guy? I think it was me, wasn't it?
I can't remember.
I think I did it.
You both fought him. You both wounded him. I don't know who had the death blow.
Man, the guilt. Now, do you feel more guilty about this or more guilty about the teenage girls in Dusk?
Honestly, I feel more guilty about this now.
So I love that as we packed up, we left the venue where we were playing, and the table talk was this guy that you've told, okay, your mission is to climb the ranks and we'll come back and debrief you one day. You know, and then you just die, and he doesn't know that you're dead, and he starts out as this low-level guy, and his mission's to move up. So we agreed walking out that probably 10 years hence, he was going to be the lord of all crime and Falkrest.
Because still we waiting. Never came back to relieve him.
And yep. he's still waiting for someone to come debrief him. In his heart of hearts, he's a guard doing the right thing. But by God, he's undercover. Okay. So... question. This situation that we created, this NPC that we created, who has become the crime lord of Falkrest, but he's really secretly in his heart of hearts an undercover guard, but no one knows it. Could we ever incorporate him into another game without that meta knowledge?
Not our current party. No. Yeah.
And what would be the purpose?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't love the show, The Blacklist, but I love the setup. And I think of this guy, this NPC coming in from the cold one day. Like, he figures out, wait a minute, those assholes are dead. And he shows up in Baron Marklehay's house as the worst crime lord in the city, and all of a sudden he's willing to turn in his fellow crime lords. I love the notion. I don't think we could ever use it.
You know, yeah. I think if there was like a special counsel... And
oh Lord!
Yeah, he could flip. That would be interesting.
Depose him, flip him, give him protection.
But here in your high school yearbook, maybe... it says that you wanted to be a town guard.
So maybe the hook you could do there, if we ever wanted to do another guards game, you could bring this guy back who has turned himself in, told the whole story, and it's the guard's duty to protect him from the crime syndicates who will now be coming after him as he turns in, you know, his 40-year crime syndicate families.
I think I'm going to let it lie. Maybe this will become a book that I write one day.
There you go.
All right, so the other high point I wanted to talk about is the TPK. So you showed up in a bar, you fought a little bit, you installed this NPC to undercover, and then, long story short, you wound up... After a fairly lengthy session, you know, 4 or 5 hours, it was a pretty long session, you decided to do a full frontal assault on the River Rats. You went down to the warehouse where they were based out of. I warned you that there were a ton of them. I warned you that they were fairly well organized. I warned you, but you went anyway, and you all died. Honestly, was it a kamikaze? Did you want to die as sort of an FU to this campaign concept? Did you want this to just be over? Were you testing my boundaries as a GM to see if I'd kill you? What was going on with doing the frontal assault despite the warning?
I think it was probably that we were maybe getting a little frustrated in that, you know, this was supposed to be more of a cerebral game, and we do not do well with cerebral games. We probably were feeling like we hadn't made any real progress in the storyline or the campaign in that time that we had played, and that was probably us expressing our... Oh, well, let's just go do this.
The way I remember it, I don't want to say hubris, but I think that our characters, again, we're sort of like the Brute Squad. We go and we break things. I mean, it just makes sense that that's exactly what we would do. I don't think we apply a lot of strategy to any of our actions. At least that's not how my character did things. So, my character is probably low on tactics, you know, high on guts.
That's like a good point, too. Yeah. I wonder if some of it was is that maybe we were more used to playing heroes, and that maybe in this capacity with these characters, we weren't as prepared to play a character to specific skills and strengths, and we all just built like high DPS fighters, and that kind of was an undertaking too.
I guess to your point, I you guys were in a mode of playing kind of grimdark badasses, and then I turned you into worker bees in a larger organization, and I think that rubbed you guys the wrong way. I think. You tell me.
I think that's probably an accurate way to look at it.
So, should I have pulled the punch and not killed you?
No, I think it's fine. It was great.
Our decisions need consequences.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we got there with this one. I was like, well, you guys are dead.
And I don't think any of us went in. None of us expected this to be a long-term thing.
No, yeah. I was thinking, like I said, 3 to 5 sessions at most. As it so happens, we did one. So, we did a couple hypotheticals about if we were to do this today. Is there any interest in revisiting the guards concept, or let's leave this one where it died?
I personally don't have any interest.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff left to dip our toes into.
Yeah, there are many tropes left to explore. All right, so we'll leave the guards campaign aside. Much to my chagrin, maybe I will revisit this. Maybe I've been talking about how for years I want to write a book, and there is a book I'm actually working on in my spare time. Not really. Maybe this will be a book that I write one day. Is how would guards in a fantasy universe approach solving the crime rate? So thinking about this total party kill, you realize that D&D 5th edition is actually the most lethal game we ever played?
Which seems crazy to me. But you're presenting us with the evidence that indeed it is.
So how many games did we play? If we played more D&D 5e than anything, wouldn't it most likely be the most deadly game that we played?
We didn't play enough 5e. So even going by ratio. So, all right, let's talk about count. So 4e, over the years, we probably played, we played rarely, probably 6 times a year, maybe. For 2.5 years.
Yeah.
So call that 15-20 sessions in 4th edition. I wiped you once. 5e, we started playing every 2 weeks, but we were doing these one-shots. And we did a lot of 5e one-shots. We did the Geomorphic Dungeon. It's a two-shot. We did the Tomb of Horrors, and that was like 4 sessions. We did L5R in 5th edition. We did a bunch of 5th edition one-shots. So maybe call that an equal number of games, but probably it was more like 10 sessions. I wiped you guys twice.
10 sessions or 10 campaigns?
10 sessions. Maybe we'll call it 15 sessions.
So when you say sessions, are you saying like literally we played like 7 games that had 2 sessions each? Or?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. I felt like it was more than that, but okay.
So still, in 5th edition, I wiped you. Actually, it's more than this. So in 5th edition, I wiped you twice. In the Geomorphic Dungeon, when you guys were wiped out, and then the next game you had to do the prison escape. Also in this game, you were wiped, and I didn't even list it in our show notes. In the L5R 5th edition game, remember those Lion Bushi that just waxed Chris?
Chris, yeah.
Horrifically just waxed the floor with him.
He wasn't thinking, though.
Yeah, that was not a party fault.
I mean, that was Chris being, love you, Chris, that was Chris not making the best decision.
Well, and I also screwed up.
It's him being arrogant in his character, which was the character he chose to
this
create.
Is true. This
so,
is true.
Yeah.
Well, Chris also soloed a bad guy that was tuned for an entire party of people your level to fight.
Yeah.
So some of it was my fault too. A lot of it was my fault. And even in Pathfinder, we played for sure. I know Brian, 17 sessions of Pathfinder, and I only nearly wiped you twice. And really, frankly, Blackfang's Dungeon was the only near wipe because three of you were down and one of you had just a few hit points left. In Mummy's the Word, one of you was down and several of you had hit points left. So the closest wipe was in Blackfang's Dungeon in the very first session. In Pathfinder, once you leveled up, you were good to go. In this Guards Guards game, you were fourth level, and I still wiped you. I think 5e is a more lethal game.
So does CR work the same in Pathfinder and D&D?
They both have CR. I wouldn't say they're calculated the same way. I think the big change is that in 5th edition, you don't get harder to hit.
Yeah, that makes sense. I get
in you. Pathfinder, you level up and you get harder to hit. In 5th edition, with bounded accuracy, you get more hit points, but a goblin can still hit you. So that's probably the key difference. I like the 5th edition's more lethal.
Yeah, I mean, I do too. I mean, if it's easier to lose it, life is more sweet, right?
Yeah. So, conclusions, to finish this recording up, what lessons did we learn talking about this game?
I'd say probably the biggest thing is, you know, if you know your parties, if you know your gaming party is not a cerebral party, you know, be careful of trying to set up cerebral adventures, or at least be prepared for them to take that off the rails.
Brian, thoughts?
I mean, specifically, though, to what Mike said, not necessarily a separate lesson. I mean, if you have an idea of what you want us to play, tell us and have us play that. Don't necessarily go through the effort with the expectation for one thing and then give us the autonomy to completely derail everything that you're trying to do. I like the way the game worked out, but as GM, it sounds like probably would have preferred that we take more advantage of all the work and time that you put into setting this up.
And maybe a different way to put it would be, I do the setup and then I ask you guys, okay, out of game, metagame, the four of you players, how do you want to approach this? That way I could have aligned the game better, where you would not, I could have set the game up to be like Double Dragon, where you're in against escalating bad guys, but you can't jump straight to the boss. I could have set up the mini campaign that way if we'd been aligned. So maybe the lesson is just align on what you're about to play.
Yeah, I mean, I like that. It makes perfect sense when you say it, like, but you know,
but we didn't do it. We didn't have the discussion.
And again, it's not just something that happens in D&D. It happens in meetings, it happens in life, it happens in get-togethers with friends. If you're not aligned, I mean, everybody's going different directions. You don't get anything out of time you spend together, whether it's playing a game or, you know, trying to solve a problem at work.
Yeah. Yeah, project meeting number one, align on what you're trying to accomplish. So I think that's the main lesson. For me, some other lessons are, you know, prep more than one set of bad guys and let the players choose. And that could be really easy to do. Look for those online resources. Yeah, and that could be another lesson. Look for online resources. I said to myself, you know, I want to capture these factions and different levels of bad guy in the faction. I wonder if something exists for that. And with a bit of Google Foo, I turned something up and was able to leverage someone else's work to do that prep. And that made the session really easy for me to run and easy to improv. All right, cool. Well, thank you for listening. Oh, actually, before we completely close out, one other set of lessons learned. So, Mike and Brian, this is the first time we're using, I don't want to say PowerPoint because it's actually Google Slides, but PowerPoint's more ubiquitous. We're using a slide deck, like a PowerPoint deck, but we're doing it in Google Slides for our show notes. Has this been better? Do we want to keep doing this?
For this show, I think it works great. Other shows, I could never do it, but for the way that this show flows, it makes perfect sense.
I think it's a great format. The only thing I would ask is, you know, is this easier for you than doing the standard show note email?
It's a little harder. It's a little harder, but not a lot harder.
I mean, it's not like you don't do, you know, PowerPoint decks and presentations at work. I mean, it's a slightly different thought process, but once you, you know, get it down, it's, I mean, using PowerPoint or Word, I mean, there's not a whole lot of difference in level of effort required.
So the reason I was asking that is, do you, Dusty, feel like you've gotten the benefit out of doing the extra work?
I do. I really feel like our conversations were to each specific topic. The only place where I thought we went a little off the rails is I skipped some questions. Between the hook and the buildup, we had some overlapping topics. So, for example, on the buildup slide where I talked about the gangs and all that, the questions here about did you think about other options, would you do it the same way today, you had already naturally covered those
yep.
as part of the hook slide. But I was able to just skip the rest of that slide and move on to the next topic pretty seamlessly. But in the future, I would watch for duplicative slides. But I really think our conversation was much more, let's cover this topic. Now let's move on and cover this topic. And I think it would be a lot, I think it's a lot easier to, will be a lot easier to follow than when we do the show notes and we meander all over the page throughout the conversation.
I think we're in agreement then that this is a good format.
Sweet. Then I will do this going forward. All right. Thank you for listening to RPG Lessons Learned. Have a great week.
People call them postmortems, evaluations, appraisals, reviews, retrospectives. We call them lessons learned, and we're sharing ours with you.